And welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Brian Keller.
I'm not Dan Fernandez.
You're not Dan Fernandez. You're Charles Torre. It's great to co-host with you.
Right,
I've never
on,
co-hosted
man.
With
yes,
you, Charles.
I don't think we've ever done any Channel 9 together.
We have. We did last week the Visual Studio launch event.
Rock and roll.
Yeah, it's a nice trend here we've got.
Totally.
So a lot of stuff happening in Redmond this week. The MVP Summit going on.
Yes.
Lots of our friends are in town for that. And one of the things that's coming out, Scott Hanselman talked about, it's on his blog here, it's the Node.js tools.
It's awesome. So I've been playing around with Node.js actually recently, getting back into doing a little hacking, and this is really nice to see. It's basically an integrated experience inside of Visual Studio to program Node.js apps.
That's great.
Or services, if you will, which I think is great. Fully open source from the beginning. And I love that, you know, Hanselman's obviously kind of a big supporter of that. And
yeah.
It's wonderful to see this inside of Visual Studio. Download it today. It's an alpha. Node.js, super cool. And go ahead and spin up a free instance of an Azure website.
Yeah.
And throw some Node.js on there.
You really can get started in just a matter of minutes. It's
minutes,
amazing.
Man.
Yep. So Enterprise Library 6, a lot of people obviously are familiar with Enterprise Library. So this has been around for a long, long time, very popular. Almost every enterprise I've ever visited uses Enterprise Library in some part of their organization. And so it's good to see Enterprise Library 6 is now published, and just a ton of information about how to take advantage of everything we know from there, like the semantic logging and the exception handling blocks and just
totally.
Everything that you know and love about Enterprise Library. New version, go check it out.
Great. And by the way, that's the guys in the Patterns and Practices.
Patterns and
world.
Practices.
And I know Gregory. He's a smart chap.
Yeah, good guys over there. Good guys and girls over there. So this is a post by Brian Harry that talks about one of our partners, eDev. And this is actually a few weeks old, but we felt like it was good to kind of give them some advertising love here.
Okay.
Because a lot of people ask about doing requirements management with TFS. And eDev has had a great solution for a long time for doing formal requirements management on top of TFS. Everything they do actually plugs right into TFS. This Smart Office for TFS is actually a more lightweight approach at doing requirements management while still following a similar flow. So what they do basically is they allow you to take a Visio document or a Word document, and you can track all of your specs in Word or all of your, your workflow architecture within Visio, and then you can map those back to work items within TFS.
Nice.
So as a business analyst, you're working in a tool that you're comfortable with, like Word or Visio, and then you're still getting that full collaboration experience when you push that back to developers.
Very nice.
Yes, absolutely. This is a great
one
as well.
One.
Yeah, this is Brian Harry saying, you know, I wonder what would happen if someone really makes a lot of use with Visual Studio Online.
Yeah.
And so this is him literally spelunking through the, he's not literally spelunking, he doesn't have a hard hat on, but
sure.
He basically went data mining through the logs of people that have been using Visual Studio Online for quite some time, because remember, prior to last week, it was Team Foundation Service.
Yes.
And he tries to answer the question of just how much data you could store in there. And the answer is actually pretty reassuring, because it's basically between 2 and 10.5 terabytes today. And they have some more feature requests on the SQL Azure team to expand that in the future. So nobody's even close to 10.5 terabytes of source code.
No.
But you know, hopefully, if for those few brave souls out there who are using that much source control, then
wow.
By the time you hit that upper limit, he's suggesting that limit may have grown by
well,
then.
Well, I'd like to meet those. I'd like to meet those people.
Absolutely.
10
yeah.
terabytes of code.
Yeah, I would
insane.
venture to guess, and we don't know this because it's we don't get to look at their actual source code, but
sure.
I would venture to guess that that's probably representative of multiple different projects or products,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to just one monolithic, huge, source control project. So
I wonder if all of the code written at Microsoft for all of our products, I wonder if that would equal 10 terabytes.
Once you start taking into account version control and binary assets, it might.
Okay.
So there's actually all this data is available online.
Right on.
We publish the dogfooding statistics for the teams that are using TFS internally, and it starts to add up to multiple terabytes. But some of that, of course, is multiple versions and binary assets and
Got
so
it.
On. Game studios, especially, they use a lot of space. Yeah. So what's Ryujit, Charles?
Ryujit is an interestingly named thing. It's basically going to be the next version of the .NET JIT. Everyone knows what the JIT is, just-in-time
yep.
compilation. That team has been doing a lot of work to optimize JIT. One of the problems with JITing in general is that it takes time.
Sure.
one of the benefits of JITting in general is that you get really optimized in real time your code.
For the specific
for
hardware.
For the specific hardware.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's sort of everyone JITs in the managed world. And these guys are doing a lot of work with optimizations, currently with 64-bit.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like they don't have a lot of new features in this,
mm-hmm.
but it's basically they've moved the code base over to RyoJIT, so go ahead and start playing with it for x64 targets.
Okay.
And give them feedback. And if you are running in cases today where your JIT is slow on 64 for some reason, send them your project or send them information there and they can help figure that out. It might help them do even better work. But it looks like the next version that's going to come out at some point will start to have some features.
Okay.
Some real optimizations.
Okay.
So
you could provide hints maybe about the type of, you know, optimization experience you want, whether or not you want to optimize it on the back end prior to your clients downloading it or defer a lot of that.
Well, they don't. So one of the things these guys don't do right now is mess around with NGen, which you know is like the native images,
mm-hmm.
because that would break a lot of stuff
that
requires it, including Visual Studio, for example.
So is NGen used when I upload my app to the Windows Phone Marketplace and it gets JITted for the various... In the cloud, gets JITted for the phone, the specific device?
That's actually another compiler these guys wrote,
which
generates MDIL. So basically, when you upload your app,
mm-hmm.
you basically all of your source code, your IL, up to the cloud.
Yep.
These guys wrote a compiler that will take that and generate what's called MDIL, which is basically an IL with machine instructions inside of it. That gets sent down to the phone.
Mm-hmm.
During installation, it basically gets linked, right? And it gets basically, there is no JIT.
Yeah.
So people should have been noticing now for months that when you load an app on your phone,
mm-hmm.
the startup time is not JIT. The startup time, for most cases, the startup
resources.
Time is going to be resources and making calls out to the internet and all that
stuff. Yeah, that's great.
But these guys have done really interesting work. And there's another compiler thing that's going on we sort of heard about, but we can't talk about. So we'll move on to the next slide.
Okay. Well, before this turns into a going deep episode on compilers, let's move on to the next news item, which is, speaking of the phone, this is a great video that Larry Lieberman did over on the Inside Windows Phone podcast, and he basically just overviews a lot of the enterprise capabilities for Windows Phone, both from the developer perspective and from the IT pro perspective. And there's nothing, I didn't see anything that was news in here, but what they do, and what I really like about this post, is they roll up a lot of capabilities that enterprises may not be familiar with today, and they also link to a ton of tech ed videos and other resources that go deeper into these variety of topics.
Great.
So it's always great to remember that, you know, Windows Phone is a great consumer device, but they really do target a lot of scenarios at the enterprise to make sure that you can use, you know, take advantage of security and administration and all that good stuff.
And Matthias is from the Netherlands, if I remember correctly. Right on, dude. Great, great field, dude. Lieberman, you never answer my emails, so I'm just going to move on to the next thing.
Okay.
Eight staggering facts about Windows.
Yeah.
Actually, there's nine. We'll get to that in a second.
Okay, what's all right.
So, interesting article. I read it when it first came out, and he made the mistake of saying hundreds of billions.
Yeah.
Which I thought was cool, because I think Bill and Steve both missed Windows beyond our solar system.
Yeah,
so the new CEO will probably kind of take care of that problem.
Sure, yeah.
Incredible when you think about how much of Windows exists in the real world. How many people actually use Windows, regardless of the versioning and stuff like that?
Yeah.
It's just phenomenal the impact this operating system has had in the world. And so I was very stunned by some of the just kind of in your face numbers.
The other thing that I'm embarrassed to admit that I didn't know is that Windows has actually been around since 1983. This month is the 30th anniversary of Windows.
Happy birthday.
Because I came on the scene back, you know, Windows 3.0 is the first version of Windows that I ever installed. It was a nice upgrade from DOS. But obviously, you know, I never installed Windows 1, but that's cool to see there as well.
And
they've
Windows,
got some screenshots in there.
Well, Windows was the first general purpose operating system that actually had a UI.
Mm-hmm.
And that was Windows 1.0.
Yeah.
And so if you look at Windows 95, that was enormous. Windows 8, like if you look at the cycles of how Windows has improved over the years, it's just phenomenally, it's amazing stuff. The ninth staggering fact is I still have code running in XP, people.
You do?
Yeah, man. 34% of the people who use Windows Occasionally will touch my code, like very rarely.
What is your code?
You don't want to know.
Okay. Another reason to
you
migrate.
You shouldn't have to hit it very often.
Another reason to migrate off of Windows XP.
Yes.
Yes. So that brings us to picks of the week.
Nice.
So my pick of the week, this blew my mind yesterday when I saw my friend Peter Provost demoing this at the MVP Summit. Basically, it's an app for your Windows Phone that allows you to, it's kind of a presentation remote. So I've got my PowerPoint, I'm presenting in front of a room of a bunch of people, mm-hmm. and on my phone, I can go straight to a particular slide. I can see the thumbnails, and I can jump straight to the slide if I want to. Uh-huh. The other thing that blew my mind, though, is that you can use a laser pointer on your phone. So I can basically push on my phone, and it'll put the laser on the screen so that everyone can see it without you actually having to have a physical laser pointer and
awesome.
Risk blinding people and bringing down airplanes and all that good stuff.
That's incredible. Yeah. Is that artifact actually recorded? So if you're streamcasting,
yeah, it's part of the video stream. So if you're cool. doing that at TechEd, for example, and you're pointing to the screen, I've gone back and watched TechEd recordings, and the guy's like, as you can see here, and you don't
you
know what
there.
He's seeing, you yeah. know? Right, exactly.
That's super cool.
And I'm going to be greedy this week because we're not doing a show next week, Charles. So I'm going to take
not?
Two picks of the week.
Thanksgiving
right. in the United States. My second pick of the week, Photo Beamer. So Rick Barraza actually walked by my office this morning, and I was showing him the office remote, and he's like, hey, check out this Photo Beamer thing. Have you tried this yet?
I haven't tried it yet.
It is an exclusive app for Windows Nokia phones. Mm-hmm. But the idea is that once you install this app, you can walk into, let's say I walk into your office and mm-hmm. I want to show you pictures of my kitchen remodel.
Okay.
I can say, go to photobeamer.com. I put my, hold my phone so that it gets the QR code. Mm-hmm. And then within seconds, I'm streaming the photos off of my phone onto your screen.
That's
it's
cool.
It's mind blowing and it's super fast. I don't know if they're using SignalR or what they're doing behind the scenes, mm-hmm. but it's just a really nice experience, exclusive to Nokia phones. Which this is not a Nokia phone,
cool.
but you know if you have one, you should definitely.
But it's a Nokia written by the Nokia team, right? It's a Nokia app.
Yeah,
which
and
is
I
why
think
it's exclusive to the Nokia.
Yeah,
phone.
That's right. That's right.
It's still a Windows Phone app, but
yeah.
they wrote it.
Yep.
And yes, you mentioned the MVP. The MVP Summit this week was very, very good for C++ people.
Okay.
So I'm happy about that.
Good.
As we've talked about it going native, and you've seen countless times on Channel 9, whether it was live last week or mm-hmm. live before last week, they're delivering, right? So CTP of the latest version of the compiler has a bunch of new C++ 14 conformance. Generic lambdas. I know people are really excited about that.
Okay.
And more and more C++ 11, they're getting there. And pretty soon, you know, we're going to have real conformance. So I just want to make a shout out to the Visual C++ team for cranking.
All right.
Right? Talking and delivering, man. So
and
rock
so
and roll.
And so this plugs into Visual Studio 2013?
Yes. Basically,
okay.
you have Visual Studio 2013, mm-hmm. and you run an installer,
okay.
and you can target a CTP compiler.
Okay.
So I could start playing around with generic lambdas and they'll compile.
Okay.
And various other features that they've written. They even have some C++ 17 forward looking things.
17?
For example,
what are you guys skipping a whole bunch of numbers?
Well, so the way conformance works, if you look at the roadmap, which of course they've shared with everybody,
mm-hmm.
Typically when you have an ISO standard language, you can't do major releases too long.
Mm.
Right? I mean, too short.
Right, right.
So
right.
you have, like, you know, the 14 is going to be a relatively modest release.
Does that mean 2014?
No,
or is
no,
that just
that's
major
2014.
Version? Okay, that's what I asked. Yeah,
so
okay.
2011, which we released in 2012. So
okay.
C++ 11 was 2012.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay, yep.
C++ 14 is probably going to be 2014.
Okay, so
right?
it's not tied to the year. It just happens to
it
be.
Happens to
happens
be.
To
it
be.
Is. Okay. I mean, that's the idea, is that
yeah.
it's the year.
Yeah.
But it's not going to be a major release.
Okay.
It's going to basically be a fixed-up version of C++
sure.
11 with some
point
more.
Point release, yeah.
You got it.
Yeah.
And 17's big. Async will come to the language, or await.
Wow.
Resumable. Yeah.
Wow.
So
amazing.
Right now, it only works for Windows 8.1.
Great.
But this is okay. just a reference compiler.
Yeah. Thanks for the pointers.
Right on, man.
See what I did there? Pointers.
You did. Oh, yeah. Dude. Pointers. Pointers. Smart pointers.
Okay. It's been 10 years since I've coded C++, so I'll just
it's
leave it at that.
It's changed a lot.
Yeah. We will be off next week, so for those of you in the United States, enjoy your Thanksgiving, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Right on, man. Thanks for having me on the show.
Definitely.
Cool.